Coming up, it's Tornado Bob and the big weather picture.
2, 3, 4, 8. The sun is out, the sky is blue. There's not a cloud to spoil the view, and it's raining. It's raining in my heart. The weatherman says clear today. He doesn't know.
Here he is. He's our weatherman, Tornado Bob. Bob Kanzemias, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
You are welcome.
I heard you walked in this morning.
No, I ended up driving.
Oh, okay. Well, you'd have had a tailwind.
Yeah.
Southwest wind, I see.
I ran out of time. I get a little too sleepy in the morning and slow going, and then, oh, gosh.
You're the opposite of me. I'm wide awake in the morning early, sometimes earlier than I'd hoped. But about 4 in the afternoon, I'm sort of running on fumes, and by about 8 o'clock at night, I've taken a nap so that I can rest up to go to bed.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, I'm slow in the morning, and now I'm getting kind of just, you know, just tired in the evening. So if I have something to do at home, and I just sleep.
Yeah.
It just seems like I sleep on both ends now.
Yeah, good.
Yep.
Glad to hear that. Well rested is well thought. Yeah. Speaking of thoughts, what's your thoughts on the weather situation here?
Hey, welcome to winter.
Yes, indeed. Why did you arrange it for the snow to fall as soon as the ice formed? That's kind of, you know, I hate to pick.
That's the way it usually is.
Why can't we have, like,
isn't there a lake
snow,
somewhere?
Snow.
Yeah, but it repeatedly snows as the cold air comes in. So
one
problem we have is when we get cold air, even the lakes themselves make this possible.
I know.
By releasing moisture to the air, which falls again as snow. So
it's vicious cycle.
It's really difficult. You have to have very unusual conditions to prevent snow on the ice.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like you've got to do a lot of that, but
it doesn't happen often enough. I know that. There's somewhere.
Somewhere
out there, and I'm waiting for that news.
What about Pekegama?
Pekegama froze just prior to this last snowfall.
Prior to yesterday's?
There's about 3 inches of snow on it, by my estimation.
Oh, okay.
You know, that it froze, I think, on the 10th.
Oh, wow. Because I was out there Friday evening, and it was looked like the whole lake was open.
Yep. And then Saturday morning, it was pretty well
frozen.
Yep. It was hovering at the right temperature.
I guess it was.
Waiting only to calm down, and then
for just a little bit, and then
bang.
It freezes.
Yeah.
Wow.
I actually witnessed that happen to a lake one day, and it was stunning. And in fact, I may have caused some of it because we were duck hunting. And it was getting cold, and I think we'd shot a duck, and we decided to save the dog, not make the dog go out and swim in that icy water. And we put the boat in, and the fellow with the oars took a stroke, and the ice just began to form around us, just like magic. It was just something. I don't know what it was, but there was some motion there, something. It just caused this little thin layer of ice to begin to form. And then once it formed, it sort of locked things in, and it got worse and worse. And
oh, that's interesting.
It was a real ordeal getting back off the lake.
Wow. So rowing out to get a duck.
Mm-hmm.
You started out and then just got thicker all around you.
Yeah, well, once it went from liquid to solid, it continued to solidify rather quickly. So it was startling.
Interesting.
Yeah. What's in store for us?
Well, I guess we've gotten into our so-called polar vortex type pattern.
It finally came.
Yeah, it came.
We've been putting it off, indifferent about it.
And just to let you know, the polar vortex is basically the center of hemispheric circulation. It's generally centered on the pole.
Mm-hmm.
In the northern hemisphere, if you look at things in the southern hemisphere and the northern hemisphere, the circulation is a little bit different. In a basic sense, it's still around the pole with, you know, the coldest air around the pole because that's where there's less sunlight at this time of year, the least amount of sunlight, or zero. I guess you can't get less than zero in terms of the amount of sunlight. But there's a difference in the symmetry around the poles. In the South Pole, there's the Antarctic continent,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, very, very roughly symmetric around the South Pole. So it's just like it's roughly circular. And there is one, the South America has a mountain range. But, once it gets to South America, it gets towards the pole, it's pretty narrow. But whereas in the Northern Hemisphere, there's ocean, there's ocean there on the pole. And then surrounding it, there are several continents with large mountain ranges. So what that does is those mountain ranges disturb the atmospheric flow so that you get these large wavy patterns. And so that will kind of disrupt, break up that vortex, which you would get over the South Pole. There's a very strong vortex, and it plays a big role in the dynamics of in the atmospheric dynamics of the Southern Hemisphere.
Hmm.
But in the Northern Hemisphere, they're, the backbone of North America, the Rockies,
right.
Play huge, a big influence.
Huge paddle.
Yep. And that disrupts the flow, the hemispheric flow. And that goes way, really north into Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
You have mountain ranges in Alaska that, you're talking more than 60 degrees north.
Right.
At that point, you're north of the main mid-latitude flow. So it is disrupted a fair bit. And so the polar vortex in the North American Northern Hemisphere will be kind of shifted away from the pole a lot of the time. So in the winter, it often resides in eastern Canada, say roughly over Hudson Bay, and then you get other parts of it. Maybe it might over Siberia, things that it's more or less broken up.
Is it too crude to think of this in the sense of a bucket of water and sort of stirring it and so you get this point,
yeah,
and that's sort of the center and technically right at the exact center that water's not moving at all, but around it moves, and it moves faster on the outside, but then you throw something into it like a mountain range and you create this
disturbance
in the flow, and then it starts to oscillate, and instead of being at the center, it sort of wanders down into
more or less. I mean, it gets
I know that's really
rotating
crude,
frame of reference, and so you get these wave patterns that develop, and if you looked at a rotating bucket, there'd be it's a starting point for understand the dynamics of
and
the.
I guess if in your bucket you put little protuberances from the edges around the bucket, it would create different eddies and flow patterns, and mm-hmm. and if they were big enough and strong enough, they'd definitely alter the center of the rotation.
Yep,
and that's essentially what's happening.
Down.
But
yeah,
you'd the have atmosphere to slow is slower.
You'd have to slow it down, slow that bucket down to scale appropriately with the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd see if you made it a lot slower, and if you just had it like rolling,
mm-hmm.
going around fast, that would not simulate the atmosphere. But if you have it, slower, so that you don't see it because it's sloshing around the side so much in a big, depression mm-hmm. in the middle, mm-hmm. Then you've got something that simulates, and you have the whole bucket rotating, and then you put yourself in that same frame of reference and you rotate with it and then watch what happens on the surface.
This gets a lot more complex than the original image I had in my head, but I understand.
But basically that's it. You have to slow it down to scale appropriately because, the Earth isn't rotating like super fast, once per day, and your bucket of water is going, around once per second or something like that.
Right.
So,
So what's happened is that center's kind of wandered off and now it's come down to near us.
Yeah.
Some
of the coldest air in the Northern Hemisphere, in terms of if you look at the bulk characteristics of the air mass, that's over, say, just north of us, mm-hmm. In southern Canada. It's broken off and it's moving kind of east-southeastward around that main center of circulation, which is kind of displaced into eastern Canada now.
Okay. All right.
And that's going to be the pattern for the next, more or less the foreseeable future. For the next couple of weeks, we'll have a brief break about this time next week. We'll get a little bit above average in temperature, but until then, it's going to be pretty cold. And then after that, it looks like it'll return to cold
mm-hmm.
reasonably quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So,
any hopes for minus 40 this winter?
I don't put any hope in minus 40.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I think it can if we get enough snow, but those sorts of temperatures are becoming less common.
Yeah.
And we're in what is basically a cold, you know, really cold air mass now. And it's similar if you look at I'm looking at these bulk characteristics I'm talking about. We have this measurement in meteorology, which we call the 1,000 to 500 millibar thickness.
I remember.
So it's the thickness of that column. If you have this column that goes about halfway up through the mass of the atmosphere. So you got half the atmosphere below you. That's about the 500 millibar level. When half the atmosphere is below you, you have half the pressure. So it's where you get to the point in the atmosphere that the pressure is half of what it is at generally about sea level.
Okay.
So when it's colder, that thickness gets collapsed. So cold air is more dense. It occupies less volume. And so we'll have 1,000 to 500 millibar thickness, this thickness up to the 500 millibar layer. That is lower. So those thicknesses, when we look at those numbers, as a basic measure of the air mass that we have. And that thickness is pretty cold. It would be supportive typically of temperatures in the minus 30s and maybe in the minus 40s. But it's just we have a little bit too much wind and not a huge amount of snow on the ground yet. So that's kind of what we're seeing. And plus, the coldest temperatures this year so far have been over North Dakota. They've had minus 20s over there.
Right.
Yeah. And I don't think we have anything in the forecast that cold.
No.
Minus teens at night, zero.
I just had my first minus temperatures here this past week. So
yeah.
I hadn't seen any of that. And so far, five, six, maybe seven below. Nothing yeah, fantastic.
This is the first colder than average air mass we've had in a long, long time. I mean, yeah. I would look back even through the summer, we hadn't had a really cold spell during the summer, like where it gets down, we're flirting with a chance of frost or something like that.
Yeah.
Temperatures in the low 40s or upper 30s, even in, which happens sometimes in July, even here.
We've had discussions before, and I think you and I agree that it was, 2005 the last time we had minus 40?
2005 is the last time Grand Rapids had minus 40 in town here, or where they take mm-hmm. the measurements.
Right.
And that's the last time any place in Minnesota recorded minus 50 or colder.
Uh-huh.
So,
and that's important because there are lots of little critters that are invading us that don't do well at minus 40.
Yep.
In fact, the gypsy moth and the emerald ash borer and a lot of those critters that are coming into our state,
they wouldn't survive a minus 50.
They don't make, minus 50 would probably wipe them out. Minus 40 would probably take 95, 96% of them out. So it would be a big hit on their population, which would be good for us.
Yeah.
So
So that's kind of what we see in terms of, I guess that would be a mechanism for how, if you talk to Harry Hutchins, and he was just on it, you talk about how forests would be responding to climate change, and that's one mechanism where that obviously is happening. He's talking about the pine bark beetle out in the West, how it's really wiped out a lot of the forests out in the western U.S. and even into Canada.
Yeah.
So these insect infestations are playing an important role in that, even when you think, well, the temperatures. The trees can survive warmer temperatures just fine, but then you stress them a little bit and get an insect infestation, and that's how the forests change.
Right.
So a little bit of a temperature, might not be too noticeable to humans, or, what's the difference between, minus 10 and minus 40, because it all feels really cold when it's below zero. So it's like to us, it's like, it still gets cold. Even if it's minus 40, 10 years or 20 years ago, and today it would be minus 30. People still say, well, it gets cold. The temperature is the same. It's still cold.
Yeah.
So, but it is different in terms of it kills more stuff if it's minus 40.
Yep. And a lot of the things that live here and have over the long term are pretty well adapted to minus 40, minus 50.
Yep.
Not a problem. But those newcomers that are a threat to us, those haven't adapted to that kind of temperature and may not have to,
winter. Yeah. So those sorts of temperatures are becoming less common. It was really extreme. extreme cold is becoming less common.
Have you got have you got one more minute?
Sure.
Because I wanted to ask you, you mentioned that there's not enough snow on the ground and too much wind. Were those the two variables that prevented it from getting to minus 40? How does that all relate? I mean, okay,
So the wind is turbulence when you have cold air. When the really extreme temperatures happen, what happens is it radiates and the cold air settles near the ground. Now, if you have wind, that tends to stir things up and you get mechanically generated turbulence through the trees and ground and buildings and things, and that will stir the air up and mix out that cold air that settles near the ground. So that process doesn't happen on a windy night, or that happens on a windy night. It prevents the cold air from happening. Whereas if it's just a calm night, that cold air stays there at the ground and it gets colder and colder. So the other thing is with the deep snow cover is it makes a good insulating surface. So it keeps the ground below it warm, but it also acts as a good radiating surface. So it radiates heat away. Water is a very good radiator. That's why when we have clouds, it stays warm. And when we have snow on the ground and a clear sky above, it gets really cold because that snow radiates heat very effectively. So if there's deep snow cover, it's an insulating against the warmer ground below and allows that radiation to happen a bit fast, a bit better than it would be on a shallow snow cover situation.
All right. Well, Bob, as always, edification has occurred. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for asking the question.
If you have a question for Tornado Bob, send it our way. Comments at kaxe.org.